Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. On May 28, it's been 1 year since the stabbing to death of a young woman in the hands of her kidnapper in Kyrgyzstan, involving a brutal practice locally known as a Ala Kachu, which is translated as a bride kidnapping. The outrageous part of the incident with this woman was the nature of her murder. The fact that she was murdered by her kidnapper in the police station, the only place where she's supposed to feel safe and protected. Yeah, the incident had created an outrage when it became public, but did this change anything? We are here to discuss this question, and also we will touch some of the broader issues like it's a public data that 1 in 5 women in Kyrgyzstan is reportedly kidnapped for marriage. So what is that we are really dealing here? What are the ways in which this practice can be stopped, and what the authorities are doing about this? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Hilary Margulis, Human Rights Watch's women's rights researcher focusing on Europe and Central Asia, Jana Arayeva, a Kyrgyz feminist civil rights activist, Bruce Fanier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So, Hilary, let's start with you. We have seen your statement in which you say Kyrgyz authorities have not done everything possible to enforce laws that could save lives of girls and women. I guess you are referring to bride kidnapping here. So explain, please, what you mean.
Yes, well, we're referring to bride kidnapping, but also to domestic violence and other forms of violence against women and girls in Kyrgyzstan. And what we found in research we conducted in April this year, which follows on research we've conducted previously, extensive research on domestic violence and bride kidnapping in Kyrgyzstan, what we found this year is that a lot of the laws that have been put in place in attempts to address this kind of violence are simply not being adequately implemented or enforced. And so you're ending up with a situation where many of these kinds of abuses are continuing.
But Jana, if you don't mind, before we dive into like a broader questions like just referred by Hilary in terms of laws and regulations, can you please explain what is bride kidnapping and how it happens and why people do it?
So we try not to refer it as bride kidnapping because nowadays, because many of experts, especially in history and women rights, they try to stop the comprehension that, because when we say bride kidnapping, it means that woman is willingly trying to get married to that guy. So we try to change the terminology from Ala Kachu, which was a tradition, to Zorduk. Zorduk means rape, like something which is made by force. So this problem is actually, as historians say, started not very long ago, because in Kyrgyz traditions, there used to be a tradition of agreeing between two young people who wanted to get married, and parents would prohibit it, so they would run away. So that is Ala Kachu. This is like what is called bride kidnapping. What we have now in Kyrgyzstan is not actually a tradition. It is actually an act of abuse, harassment against women rights, and it's also something that is actually violating our general human rights a lot, and is not actually what historians say a tradition in Kyrgyz culture.
You know, there are people, Jana, in Kyrgyzstan who defends this practice, whatever we call this, claiming this to be part of local tradition. I know there is no justification for this, but I'm not here to defend them and that ideology either. But we have to look into this from their perspective to understand the nature of the problem. So when those people are confronted, how the supporters of this practice defends their ideology?
Usually, as you say, there is no proof for that. It was obvious tradition, and we don't have any explanation of that in historical books or whatever, any resources telling that it was such a tradition. But it's usually more tradition of enforcing women, objectification of women. It's like enslaving women, actually, what is happening now. So what we have in Kyrgyzstan is not the problem of violent traditions of or whatever. It's a huge problem of community, of society, as not getting the understanding that women are actually people. So they, those people who kidnap those females, those women, are actually seeing them as objects. So that is a broader explanation for the, for why it is happening, rather than traditions.
No, I totally understand that. It's brutal practice, Jana, but I'm just trying to understand this from the perspective of people who are involved in this. Coming back to the same question, why they do it and how they justify the actions that they take?
Well, I'm on the other side of the battlefield. So
okay, let's...
What I usually hear is that, yes, we have the tradition, and, you know, usually they say, oh, like, it's a big deal to get married, so women should be happy to being kidnapped. So it's a big honor for a woman to be kidnapped, because unmarried woman is like not a person. So sometimes I hear that rhetorics in social media, in discussions. There is no general information, like centered information about that, but that's what I hear from supporters of that wild practice.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, Bruce, I will get back to you shortly. Before that, Hillary, you know, during your research, I mean, what has been your impression of responses that you got from people who, the one who defend this tradition, if there is any tradition like that? And also, do we have any figure as to how many cases of, now I'm kind of confused how to name this, when how do you name that, Hillary, by the way, like bride kidnapping or something else?
I mean, I think, you know, we would say, like Jana pointed out, it's really a situation of forced marriage and
forced
kidnapping
marriage.
Or abduction. Abduction for marriage, forced marriage. You know, and as Jana said, I think many people fall back on this idea of tradition and belief to defend it. So, you know, for example, what we heard many, many times when I was doing initial research for our report was, this is the Kyrgyz way, this is the Kyrgyz mentality, this is Kyrgyz tradition, and that goes for forced marriage and sometimes child marriage, but also for any form of domestic violence and violence against women and girls, that it is simply to be expected and accepted. And I think, as Jana said, a lot of this has to do with this idea that a woman or a girl, her role in society continues to be defined by being a mother, being a wife, essentially being quite subservient and really serving the family. And so when you have that, the woman is not, or girl is not, seen as an independent being. I mean, as Jana said, you know, she's really seen as an object and sort of that it's okay to then treat her this way. You know, the other thing that we found and continue to find is that there is such stigma associated with women or girls who leave a marriage, either who seek divorce, who try to escape abuse and separate from a partner, or who try to escape a forced marriage, a so-called bride kidnapping. There's such stigma that it's very, very difficult for them to actually get out of these situations and seek help. And often what we found was that even their own families would say to them, for example, in cases where women or girls had been taken for marriage and forced into marriage, their parents, if they were able to get in touch with their parents, would say, well, now that you're there, you have to stay. You know, it would be too shameful, and it would go against the so-called Kyrgyz mentality and Kyrgyz way for you to leave. So it really puts an enormous amount of pressure on these women and girls. In terms of numbers, unfortunately, we really don't have good numbers. So although, you know, cases are reported and there are statistics of, as you said, you know, a significant number of marriages being forced marriages, because this is a practice that tends to be done outside of official channels. So, for example, many of these marriages are not actually registered with the state. They're often conducted in religious ceremonies only and not officially registered, there's really no way to know. Mm-hmm. The only time that a case becomes part of the statistics is if someone comes forward and registers a complaint. So we really don't have very good data on the scale of the problem, but it is clear that it continues to be an issue.
And I believe not many people comes forward and to register the complaint, I believe, in this case. As you said, there's a stigma attached to that.
Yes, I mean, many people do not, either because of stigma, because of fear. In some cases, women also become very dependent on their abusers, including people who may have, men who may have kidnapped them and their and the men's families. They're dependent financially. They also may fear having their children taken away from them. So there are a number of reasons that unless someone objects to the marriage, such as a parent, for example, or occasionally the victim herself, it's very difficult for the case to ever even come into any kind of statistics.
Right. You know, in terms of number, I was just reading the Reuters story. It was based on some study conducted locally saying one in five women in Kyrgyzstan is kidnapped for marriage. And also, in terms of the name, forced marriage, I think it doesn't do enough justice with the brutality, you know, because forced marriages happen in a number of other countries where parents force their daughters into marriage to someone that she doesn't want. But here, cases very different. But anyhow, Bruce, is this a Kyrgyzstan-specific problem that we are talking about, or there are examples from other countries in the region?
Oh, there's been examples in Kazakhstan also. You were asking a minute ago about what the other side of the argument is, although I don't see there's really an argument here. It's pretty wrong, but for what it's worth, when I was working in villages in Kyrgyzstan in 1992 and 3, you know, and all over the country, obviously this is something that people brought up. And I could never be sure how frequent it was. It was strange that they would even bring it up, because then they wouldn't say very much about it at all. You know, so I said, well, how many women around here are ended up getting married in such a way or hooked up to some partner, and they would just kind of say, well, it happens, you know, and it was obvious from the conversation that it happened enough that probably there were people in the village I was working in that were in that situation, women that were in that situation, but like no one wanted to talk about it at all, right? You know, and maybe that was because I was a foreigner and they didn't want to let me in on it or something like that. But I mean, it really didn't seem to be a topic of conversation, and I couldn't figure out if that was because maybe they considered it was just so normal, you know, at that point. And they told me that the tradition stemmed from nomadic days, and this is how young men, when they didn't have enough women in their own circle, moving group, clan, and that it was part of it was really raiding, you know, the same way that you hear about raiding and looting and stuff, and that was how they got wives. That was what I heard. Like I said, I don't know, but that was the tradition that went along with this. But again, it was strange to me that it was something that, even though they couched it in those terms, as something that was a practice from hundreds of years ago, let's be clear about this, and the Kazakhs have the same tales too. This is how it started. You know, hundreds of years ago, this is what you had to do. But at the same time, like I said, it's not something that anyone wants to talk out loud about or public about, which kind of made me figure that maybe, you know, what if it's no big deal, then why aren't you talking about it? But I kind of got the impression that even for the people who were probably the perpetrators of this, it's not an act that makes you proud, that's for sure. And people didn't really want to discuss it, you know, at all, which was very strange, because they would discuss everything else with me and gossip about everything else that happened. But that was a no-go zone, you know, at least for more than two or three questions.
Very interesting. Thank you, Bruce. So what are the ways in which this brutal situation can be dealt with, and what are the authorities are doing to stop it? Let's continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis. I'm joined by Hilary Margolis, Human Rights Watch's women's rights researcher on Europe and Central Asia, Yana Arayeva, Kyrgyz feminist, civil rights activist, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing violence against women in Kyrgyzstan. So who to start with? Let's start with you, Yana. So whatever we call this, there is a one definition to that. It's a horrible practice. It's totally unfortunate and sad that it continues. It just doesn't match to Kyrgyzstan's progressive image in terms of, you know, liberties, where you guys enjoy far more rights than some of your neighboring countries in Central Asia. So what are some of the contributing factors to this problem which allows this to continue?
I think that this problem is a part of a huger problem, a problem which is general in human rights in Kyrgyzstan, and also rights of children. And we have a complex of problems, which one of them is this violent practice. So we have a lot of domestic violence, gender-based violence. We have a lot of things which are not actually complying with the understanding of a developed country or progressive country, let's say. So in terms of women rights, we still have so many issues to solve that in complex, I think that understanding of the concept of women rights is not established in the general society nowadays, because mostly they say, okay, you already have those rights, you have election rights and etc. And during Soviet Union, you have enjoyed everything, you can work, you can earn money. Mm-hmm. You have maternity leaves, and so what do you want? So usually the general, when I see generally in media and social media especially, the thing about objectification of women, which I mentioned before, it's one of the main causes. And maybe we should change the way how society understands the meaning and the role of women in it.
Mm. Okay, Hillary, what's your thought on that? I mean, in terms of the contributing factor which allows this practice to continue in Kyrgyzstan?
I agree. I mean, I think that a lot of it has to do with attitudes and behaviors that persist, that are conducive to violence against women and girls. This includes attitudes and behaviors on the part of authorities and law enforcement, for example. So what we hear is that women and girls who do seek help for cases of whether it be forced marriage or other forms of domestic abuse are often urged and really pushed to reconcile with their abusers and not to break up their families, and that this kind of violence is really minimized and not treated as serious. The government has taken some steps in terms of legislation to attempt to address some of these issues, such as, you know, a family violence law, a new family violence law adopted in 2017, and it has criminalized bride kidnapping. Mm-hmm. It has also now criminalized the performance of religious marriages for children. But many of these laws are just not enforced. And so there continues to be considerable impunity for committing these crimes. And that sends a message that it's acceptable to some extent, or that at least it will not be punished and not necessarily be taken seriously by the judicial system.
You know, the type of challenges, Hillary, you are talking about and earlier Yana discussed, it might also exist in some other Central Asian countries, isn't it? But why Kyrgyzstan stands out? I mean, why we are talking about Kyrgyzstan, not so much about other Central Asian countries, Hillary?
I mean, we are also talking about other countries in the region. I have colleagues currently who are working on the issue of domestic violence in Tajikistan, in Kazakhstan. We've talked about issues in countries like Georgia, in parts of Russia. So it's really not an issue that is, you know, independent to Kyrgyzstan. And I think, as I said earlier, because data on these kinds of crimes is so difficult to come by, it's hard to do any kind of comparisons. But we do know that the situation in Kyrgyzstan is quite concerning. And I think, in part, some of it has to do with attention that has come to the situation in Kyrgyzstan because of events and incidents that have been publicized, like, you know, how you started the podcast, the murder of Borelai, unfortunately, a year ago, which really did draw attention to this practice and the fact that women and girls are at very high risk because they're being abducted and then sometimes, you know, in very brutal ways, abused.
Right. Okay. Bruce, just a follow-up question pop up in my mind to Hillary, but I also wanted to take your take on some of the contributing factors, you know, generated from your own conversation when you were in Kyrgyzstan. So what do you have to say on that?
Like I said, almost a taboo topic. You know, people would tell me some stuff about it, but like I said, not much. Enough that I understood it was going on pretty much everywhere around the country that I went. You know, again, one of the strange things was that, and we've heard some really compelling stories already. I would add to that it was my understanding, at least from a couple of villages I was in, that there were girls that not only ran away back to their home, and their own parents drove them back or brought them back, you know, to the house of their kidnapper. Hillary had mentioned that a lot of them escape, and their family doesn't want anything to do with them. But in some cases, they're actually brought back by their own parents. Which is really, really strange. And I think we all know what Kalim is, right? It's the bride price, right?
Kalim, yeah, okay.
I met people, you know, all over Central Asia, and we'll deal with this on a more, bring this back into women's rights in general, but I've met a lot of people that were willing to admit that they had bought their bride, but I did not ever meet anyone that was willing to admit they had kidnapped their bride. Even when, you know, what I was, you know, Kalim, the bride price, was already kind of obviously I knew what it was. I didn't know that it was still being practiced. So that was one thing. But like I said, I met several people that were willing to admit to that. Yeah. But I never met anyone who was willing to say that they had kidnapped their bride, which shows you that even that seems a bit too far to actually say publicly to somebody else.
Okay. You know, though it's a painful, but the hopeful aspect in this discussion is, I believe, people like Yana is increasingly picking up this topic and making a difference, I should say. So what are some of the common challenges you guys face in ways in which this problem can be resolved within your campaign, day-to-day campaign?
Usually we have a lot of opposition that we are trying to fight the traditional ways and that we are trying to change the things, and there are lots of things said about that, but usually the hardest thing is to make people understand what the cause is and what we are talking about, what our message is, because not only related to topic of human abduction, women abduction. It's also, we had a march on 8th of March, a women march, which was very much discussed in Kyrgyzstan, also including the members of parliament, and they didn't even like the messages that women shouldn't wash the dishes and shouldn't put tea to their men, like the message which says women should not serve men and women are there not for serving. So after those huge discussions, we understood that there is very long way and there are lots of things which we should change as the movement in comprehension of all those issues related to women rights and women's position in the society. It's much more wider than just the kidnapping of women to force them to marry someone.
Just coming back to the first question that I had in mind when starting this discussion, talking about ways in which this practice can be stopped or changed. Hillary, did the outrage on Borelai's killing did make any difference? I guess your report was in part about this. Did that outrage, did that public discussion made any contribution in terms of changing the way this practice is in the country?
I think it certainly drew attention to it and to the concerns around it and the risks around it. And I think, you know, activists and service providers at crisis centers told us that it definitely raised the profile of the issue and that the public had become more aware of, you know, this so-called bride kidnapping as a problem. And then in some cases, even women and girls were more aware of their rights related to marriage, that this is illegal, and that they should not be forced into marriage or abducted for marriage. And that in some cases, there was, because there was more awareness, there was more likelihood of reporting. However, they were also quick to say that, but unfortunately, the practice does continue. It has not stopped. And in some cases, there was concern that it had been driven underground somewhat, even more. I think it's important as a first step that this kind of awareness happens, and that, you know, I think that the public outrage did put some pressure on the government to react and respond. But I would say that it does not seem that there has been enough of a response in terms of doing things like making sure that women and girls are educated about their rights, making sure that instances of bride kidnapping are punished, and that law enforcement also, you know, are aware of how they should respond. There has been reportedly some improvement in police response to specifically to incidences of abduction for marriage, but I think there's still room for improvement.
What do you say? What's the main reason behind ineffectiveness of the authorities to handle this case? And you mentioned the couple of laws and regulations being passed, and you say there's not enough mechanism to enforce that. So what do you say the reason behind why authorities are not forcefully implementing these laws, these procedures?
Well, I think when it comes to violence against women and girls more broadly, as I said earlier, there are issues around even believing a victim to begin with, or even taking a complaint and filing a complaint. There are issues around understanding the real severity of this kind of violence and really taking it seriously. And so instead, what we find is that often they are encouraged to simply go back to their abusers, potentially at great risk to themselves. And, you know, as one service provider said to us, you know, the police will issue protection orders, for example, in cases of domestic violence, or they might stop a case of bride kidnapping, but only if they know the law. So some of it has to do with a lack of adequate training and knowledge as well among law enforcement, and really understanding the laws related to these issues and how they're meant to be responding. But I think it also comes down to this idea of, you know, these attitudes around the value of women and girls in the community and their role being one of wives and mothers. You know, one activist told us, for example, about how girls in many schools are essentially continuing to be taught that their objective is to be a wife and a mother. So, you know, an environment where women and girls continue to be perceived as having a very limited role in society. And you know, I think that that only contributes to how authorities are going to respond when they come forward and say, I am being abused, I'm being hurt, I've been kidnapped, and I need to get out of this situation. It doesn't, this kind of environment doesn't support women and girls escaping that kind of circumstance.
So, Bruce, what do you see? Where the change needs to begin? And where do you see government playing a role in this?
Well, I think Hillary and Jana have accented exactly what needs to be accented, and that's that, you know, really this is a problem at the very roots of the society and in places. You know, this has been going on and getting publicity reports, including in the West, for, you know, 25 years. Right. I mean, it's been going on for a lot longer than that. But as far as reporting, you know, once Kyrgyzstan became independent, these kind of reports make their rounds in cycles every now and then. I've seen it. And every time they do, and you get a story about some, you know, the bride kidnapping, the Kyrgyz government tightens the law a little bit, you know. And so over the course of 25 years, it's gotten a little bit more tight. But, you know, we still had Burulai killed last year, which shows you that it hasn't made a huge amount of progress. Now, why? You remember the video our Kyrgyz service did this last winter where in Bishkek they had the car pulled over and the guy's talking with the traffic cop, and you can hear a woman screaming inside the car and kicking and saying, I'm not his wife, I'm not his wife. And the cop and the guy talk for a few minutes, and the guy just drives off in the car, and the cop isn't even interested in who's in the car screaming, you know? So, I mean, it's if so, so many people are on board with this, you know, Rose Otunbayeva said after Borolai was killed that, that the women of Kyrgyzstan got to take responsibility for this too, because they're the ones that are signing off on this, you know, the mothers of these men that they kidnap women, take these terrified young girls in. And a huge, there is a part, a significant part of society that's willing to accept that. And so that's where the fighting this tradition all happens. Because if you have that many people that are not going to complain about this because they think it's okay, or at least it's just part of their culture, then, you know, you can pass all the laws you want.
Yeah.
But no one's going to be a witness. No one's going to complain.
Yeah, you know, definitely there are lots of fault lines when we talk about the authorities here in this particular situation. And also, Bruce, you raised a very interesting question in terms of the Ruza Otunbayeva statement. Yana, let me take your point in this. I mean, talking about the change, where it should begin, what role do you think society should play or is playing in this?
I think that civil society is doing a lot of things to promote the right messages in that, and especially those organizations which work in communities are trying to inform local people about, especially women, about how to defend themselves, and that this so-called tradition is very wrong, and that women should not face the domestic violence, any kind of violence in societies. So the change will probably start with the collaboration of all those actors in the society, both the beneficiaries of those changes and the actors who are among the civil activists, and also in collaboration with government and decision makers. So what we are not trying to do as a movement is to make all of them actually understand the significance of this work. And I hope that by small steps or maybe something happens, and with some very high speed, the society will understand. And it's also important that media, mass media, is involved in that process.
Right. Okay. Terrific. Thank you very much, Yana. I guess we are about the time where we finish our discussion. But if there's any point we have missed, Bruce, Hillary.
Hillary and John, if you could talk about the work of non-governmental Pakistan to help people, I'd be interested.
I was just going to say, building on something that Yana mentioned, that I think, you know, one of the important things to note is that it's really the non-governmental organizations, the civil society groups and activists who are providing almost all of the services and the help to women and girls who find themselves in these situations. And that's another area where, you know, the government really needs to step in and step up its assistance. So, for example, you know, women and girls who try to escape these kinds of circumstances, often their only option to really get out of the situation is to go to a shelter, because they're usually living with their partner or their husband and his family. And they often, as I said, you know, mentioned earlier, can't go back to their own family or their own community. And so there's an extreme need for this kind of service provision and shelter, immediate shelter, and yet there are extremely few of them in Kyrgyzstan, and even fewer that receive any government support at all. So this is a case, for example, where non-government organizations are really stepping in and providing services like shelter, psychosocial support or counseling, making sure that women and girls have legal aid, making sure that they get to a health facility. And it's non-governmental groups that are doing virtually all of this. And these are services that the government really needs to be making available and ensuring.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Hilary Margulis, Human Rights Watch's women's rights researcher. Yana Araiva, Kyrgyz feminist, civil activist. Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week. Bye-bye.